It is 27 past the hour, that hour being 9 in the a.m. here in the Central Time Zone of the U.S. I'm Jim Park in Central Texas. Sharon Burgess is up there in Oklahoma. And coming us from another time zone entirely is Pastor Robbie Pruitt, who's out there in Virginia. Robbie, an Anglican pastor, his home's in Ashburn, his church is in Fairfax, Virginia. And he's also the executive director of Preserving Bible Times, a ministry that we are very close to personally here. Robbie, welcome. We had you last week along with your friend Daryl. That was quite a conversation we had.
That's right. The Reverend Daryl Fitzwater from Appalachian Anglican Podcast. He's bishop elect for a Reformed Episcopal or Anglican diocese, the Diocese of All Saints, I believe it is.
Yeah, I was at a loss to come up with his title, so I had to leave the introduction to you. So, but I think we decided rector was the title for rector.
Yeah, it means ruler. Mm-hmm. I think most Protestant churches are used to the term pastor, which is a shepherding term, which is kind of where we're going today. And it's good to be with you, Jim and Sharon. Always a pleasure to be with each of you on the Broken Road.
Sheep and shepherding. The theme is front and center, pretty much through the New Testament and even the Old Testament, makes ample references to sheep and shepherding. And of course, Jesus is known as the Good Shepherd. That's one of his many titles. How does that pertain to us? I mean, sheep are dumb. They have a flocking instinct. They're not known for taking care of themselves. Are we sheep because we need him?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a humbling metaphor, isn't it?
It is.
That all we, as the Bible says in the Old Testament, all we like sheep have gone astray. Each of us have wandered our own way. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to be equated to a sheep, you know.
But in some respects, you can take comfort in the fact that a sheep is totally dependent.
Yeah.
And we need to learn from that.
Or
doesn't mean we're always there.
Well, John 10 deals with sheep and shepherds, and Robbie has given us Ezekiel also, which intrigues me because Ezekiel was a prophet captive in Babylon, was he not? And he's talking about the sheep and the shepherds, and he's talking about the shepherds in particular in the Ezekiel 1 through 10, in chapter 34, by the way, if you'd like to follow along. Was he picking on the leadership in Babylon after the captivity, or was he referring to the classic Jewish era in Israel?
I mean, it's the Jewish leadership that has gotten them into the place that they're in. And Ezekiel 34, 1 through 10, we see this beginning of looking at good shepherds and bad shepherds, though it's in Isaiah, too. I mean, we just quoted Isaiah 53:6, all we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him, and we believe as Christians that him there is Jesus the Messiah. They've laid on him the iniquity of us all. But this idea of good shepherds and bad shepherds can be found not only in Ezekiel 34, this good shepherd, bad shepherd. It's actually the bad shepherds in the temple system that's corrupted that gets the children of Israel exiled into Babylon in the first place. So in Ezekiel 34:2, you see Son of Man prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. And there's your clue there that it's not the Babylonians, it's the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, even to the shepherds, thus says the Lord God, ah, shepherds of Israel, who have been feeding yourselves, should not the shepherds feed the sheep? And that's the issue. Instead of the shepherds taking care of the sheep, they're only taking care of themselves. And instead of the shepherds caring for the sheep, meeting their needs, they're not only neglecting the sheep, but they're using the sheep to basically feed themselves and to benefit off of them.
So it sounds like Ezekiel is holding the Pharisees throughout history, the organized Jewish history in Israel, holding them accountable for the captivity and the breach of the covenant.
Yeah, and I believe that we're getting the shepherding image from Israel's beloved King David. I mean, you've got Saul, the first king, In contrast to David, the beloved king, the king who's after God's own heart, and David begins his journey of leadership as a shepherd out in the field, the youngest of Jesse. And during the Who's Going to Be King parade over at Jesse's house, they went through all the sons. And God didn't reveal to Samuel that any of these sons would be the next king of Israel. And, of course, Samuel says to Jesse, do you not have any more sons? And he says, yeah, one, but he's out in the fields shepherding the sheep. And so Samuel says, bring him to me. Mm-hmm. And that's the beloved king. So from that point on, I believe, certainly Moses was a shepherd. He was a shepherd leader. So we see this in the Torah as well.
Now, what's interesting about Moses is who would have thought he was like a shepherd? But he spent years in mm-hmm. In Midian.
That's right.
North of Egypt, learning how to be a shepherd.
Tending his father-in-law's flocks.
Was it 40 years, I believe, he was doing that.
And Jacob and his father-in-law Laban, his wife Rachel, this mm-hmm. is how they meet. So they're shepherds as well. You could make the case that Abraham's a shepherd, and that's as early as Genesis. So you see the patriarchs are shepherding the people as well, and the kings. And so this shepherding imagery begins early and carries throughout the Bible, even in Jesus' own words in John 10:10.
I think it's interesting that God chose shepherds who had basically no social status whatsoever. I mean, they were out with the smelly animals. They were not, I don't think they were highly respected, were they? Other than they protected the sheep, and that was their value.
Well, what's the saying? It says it's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, it really changed over time, though, because in David's day, I mean, sheep are essential. They're the wealth for many mm-hmm. of the people in the small villages of Judea and southern Israel. So the people who kept the shepherds were very important here. Let me see if I can stop that.
Is that one calling you now?
I usually throw that phone across the room when that happens. I just can't stop it. But
shepherds had no communication like that. They just had to be aware all the time.
What I'm trying to get at is in David's day, a shepherd had some value, but by the first century, shepherds were lowlifes. And not just because they were with the animals, but the religious establishment considered them thieves. And they were not permitted to go to the temple. This is how the Christ child, how amazing it was that the shepherds were the first to learn mm-hmm. of the Christ child. They were considered thieves because they would graze their flocks on other people's grass, and they could not pay for that. So in the minute Jewish law system, I mean, in the minutia of Jewish law, that made them thieves. And so they were looked down upon. They were socially unacceptable for lots of reasons by Bible times. So that Jesus still uses them as symbols is even more significant, I think, given that information. It separates the good shepherd from the bad ones.
Yeah. And we've got good shepherds today, and we've got bad shepherds today. I mean, in our time, it's prosperity gospel preachers like, say, Kenneth Copeland, who flies a private jet all the way to, I was just watching a Facebook post blow up, about a pastor wearing a $2,000 sweater, and it was an ugly sweater. And one of my buddies said, I can't tell why I'm offended right now. Is it because the pastor is wearing a $2,000 sweater? Or is that he's wearing the sweater that ugly? So he was making the point that, wow, I wouldn't go to this guy's church. I mean, he made the point, I'm living paycheck to paycheck. I don't have these kinds of problems of getting, internet trolls blowing up the social media feed because I'm wearing a $2,000 sweater. Don't know what that kind of problem's like.
Well, don't you think if they were the closer you are to preaching the truth, the less likely that you're going to be in it for the money.
Right.
Does that make sense?
And then again, you've got some really wealthy pastors that I would argue who are
preaching the truth.
Yeah, exactly. Someone like Rick Warren who's motivation. He's given all of his book money back to the church. I mean, he's reverse tithe. He's kept 10% and given away 90. I mean, and he still's thinking filthy rich. He'll tell you that.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about shepherds, we're talking about pastors and preachers and ministers. And I'm wondering how we look at our leaders generally. I can't think of any of them that I would want to be a sheep to. I can't say. I don't think we trust people enough to really become sheep. And so that Jesus would ask us to trust him is, at least to us in the West, is kind of an alien concept. We're supposed to be self-sufficient here. We're not supposed to be dependent on a shepherd. And yet he's telling us, yes, you do.
Yeah, I mean, he does say, I am the good shepherd. I lay my life down for my sheep. And that's how you can tell a good shepherd, is the shepherd sacrificing himself for the sake of the sheep, or is he sacrificing the sheep for the sake of himself? I mean, that's the opposite end of the verse. I am the good shepherd. I lay my life down for my sheep, John 10:10, the thief, I come to give life to my sheep, but the thief comes to kill, steal, and destroy. So that's the antithesis of what a shepherd, a good shepherd, is supposed to be giving, laying down his life, while the enemy is coming to do three things: kill, steal, and destroy. So are you killing the sheep? Are you stealing from the sheep? Are you destroying the sheep? Or are you laying your life down so that the sheep can live? And if you look at like the epistles, especially 1 Peter chapter 5, and if you take a Roman Catholic view, you know, you think Peter's the first pope. That's not my stance, but he's certainly an apostle, and he's a leader of God's church. And here in 1 Peter 5, we get a beautiful picture of what a good shepherd is supposed to look like. And this passage was actually read at my ordination, where Peter says, "So I exhort the elders among you as fellow elders and witnesses of the sufferings of Christ, as well as partakers in the glory that is to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God that is among you." In other words, certainly Jesus is the chief shepherd, but we have under shepherds, we have pastors, we have rectors, we have bishops and priests and deacons leading and shepherding God's church. And for this, Peter says, shepherd the flock that, of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those who are in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd, and there it is, we have a chief shepherd, and that's Jesus. Jesus is the head of his church. He is the sheep, the chief shepherd, and there are under shepherds. But when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. Likewise, you who are younger should be submissive to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility towards one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble.
Robbie, you've given us John chapter 10, too. And I want to read just the first couple of verses here. This is from the English Standard Version, the ESV. "Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out." This is an allegory that people in Israel would have been totally sensitive to. Sheep folds with an opening, and then the sheep shepherd sleeps there to protect against intruders. Now, sheepfold it could have been a cave, it could be an open area surrounded by a low wall of rock or brush, something to kind of corral the sheep. You got a Snoopy hat. We'll make comment. But I'm bringing this up because the shepherd truly has control over who has access to the sheep, and they know his voice. In fact, a good shepherd leads the flock by walking in front and calling them. The sheep know his voice, if there are temporary shepherds to help, they're necessarily behind the flock driving them. And all this is something that's easily understood there. I have a question for you. Peter would have known all about sheep and shepherds, being in Israel, and really assigned his task, his field, was Jews who would come to the Messiah, come to know the Messiah. Does Paul ever refer, does he ever use the sheep allegory? Oh, I lost your voice.
That's an interesting question. I don't think he does. And I think it might be an interesting socioeconomic kind of societal thing happening
here. He had a completely different kind of culture he was preaching to. They were more like us. They were like Westerners. They were not agriculturally oriented. They were city-oriented and city-dwellers, and they were merchants, and they were teachers, and they were lawyers, and they were senators, and it was a polytheistic culture. So their idea of following a shepherd would have been alien to them, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of many agricultural references from Paul. It's interesting that Paul does quote, you know, their poets. Mm-hmm. You know, when he's in Athens, you do get like a more white collar academic kind of slant from Paul, where it's still like blue collar fisherman, more agrarian from Peter. You know, one thing that I do find is interesting during Paul's conversion, that Jesus uses an agricultural kind of term or metaphor for Paul. He says, "It is difficult for you to kick against the goads or the prick." And he's talking about a yoked oxen kicking against, you know, a plowman's prick or
cattle prod kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly like before, like electric cattle prods, you get this goad. And this is where you get, "Don't goad me," or, you know, "prod me along." It's this sharp pointed thing. So while Paul doesn't really use that kind of agricultural metaphor, Jesus does with him, which I think is fascinating.
Three times.
But Peter is a fisherman, and he grows up in Galilee, and he's going to be around sheep all the time.
And he was told by Jesus, "Feed my sheep, feed my sheep, feed my sheep." I mean,
but the exactly. And this is what the leaders of the church are supposed to be doing. And this is the first act of Jesus as he reveals himself to these fishermen on the shores of Galilee. He feeds his sheep. What's he do? 153 fish and a cookout on the beach of the Sea of Galilee, where Jesus restores Peter by a charcoal fire. The last time Jesus sees Peter is the betrayal, the denial, in the courtyard by a charcoal fire. And now Jesus is restoring Peter by the shore. But this sheep imagery, and you're right to point out, you know, the sheep pen imagery that Jesus uses, he would have seen this in Nazareth. We know there are sheep in certainly fields and places to shepherd, but majority of the shepherding was happening in the south. In the time of David, there would have been sheep pens, caves, rock outcroppings, rock walls that would be built up into a corral with an opening. And indeed, the shepherd would lay down, literally lay down his life. And so if you come through the gate, you're a friend of the shepherd, or you are the shepherd. But if you come in another way, the image there is an animal or a thief coming over the wall instead of through the shepherd. And so if you're going to come in and out to find pasture, if you're a sheep, you do so through the door, which is the shepherd himself who is protecting his sheep. And of course, if you're going to be protected, you have to come in and the shepherd lays down. And if there's someone coming in and out of that sheepfold any other way, that's not good news. And that's not the good shepherd. And that's the enemy that comes to, quote, kill, steal, and destroy. And the other piece is that, you know, a sheep will know their shepherd's voice. That's important. And then Jesus tells other parables as well. He tells about the 99 in Luke chapter 15, the lost sheep. Which one of you has 100 sheep and one goes astray? Does not he leave the 99 and go find the one? Now, that's perplexing if you're the other 99. Did my shepherd just leave me? You know? But the idea is those 99 are okay. They're not the ones lost or in danger. It's the one that is. And so a good shepherd will go find his lost sheep.
Yeah, and that would be a large flock, because another idea of the shepherding, particularly in southern Israel, where it's semi-arid and even desert, there's not a lot of pasture. You got to keep moving the sheep to find grass for them. Hmm. It's not like that. That's why there are no cattle, no horses. Sheep and goats are what persisted and were successful down there, and they represented the wealth of the poor people, the poor classes. So a shepherd with 100 sheep, those sheep would have belonged to a number of people through a village or two. And the shepherding was a profession. He would be hired to take care of their wealth. And that was wool. It was milk. It was yogurt. It was butter. It was a lot. What sustained them. Yes. So sheep were of great importance. If you get to Paul, it's a whole different idea. And if you come to us here in the West, it's a whole different idea. So yielding to this allegory of the sheep and shepherds is a challenge for us. But I guess a good question that would help us focus is, whose voice are you listening to?
Yeah. Who? What are the shepherds in your life, and are they good? Because some of these voices can be leading you astray, and some of them are, you know, of God, and some of them aren't. And this is what David's getting at. I mean, one of the most glorious psalms ever written, most memorable, used at most funeral services, memorized by most people for hard times, is the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. You anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And that's the Good Shepherd Psalm. And David is saying, the Lord is my shepherd. One of the greatest shepherds in all of history says, the Lord is my shepherd.
There's something else that's stunning about that to me, though. And it takes us, I don't want to open another whole topic here, but the last words of Christ on the cross. Why have you forsaken me? And it is finished. The first and last words of Psalm 22. And my understanding is that though they were separate writings, they were thought of together, Psalms 22, 23, and 24. And each of them is a different phase of what Christ went through on the cross. And when he is contemplating death and he's about to expire, to have him have Psalm 22 running through his mind, which is what he would have seen around him as he was being tortured on the cross. Psalm 23 is what must have run through his mind as he was dying. So it's really, in that case, God the Father seems to me to be the shepherd. And he is the sheep, and he's about to... And then 24 is like his victory song. So the three together need to be seen as a whole. But to imagine that Christ was saying this with respect to what he was experiencing at that moment is just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I've said that psalm getting a CAT scan, when I was at some of my most worried state, you know, that psalm has comforted me. And it's comforted so many, because if the Lord is our shepherd, we shall not be in want. He provides for us. He's our provider. And this is the picture when you're looking for an under shepherd, if you're looking for a pasture church to which to graze in, be sure that the under shepherd there is going to provide for you. But also, don't mistake the under shepherd for the good shepherd.
One's full of sin and is trying to get along here.
And I am one, so I can tell you that's true. And the other is sinless and is ultimately the provider. Mm-hmm. One is trying to point to the other. So there's no substitution for the good shepherd. No under shepherd's going to get it right. So if you find yourself disappointed with your under shepherd, that's going to happen. There's no perfect shepherd, but there is the good shepherd, and he's perfect. But everyone mm-hmm. should find good pasture, should find a good shepherd that they think that they can follow and want to be like and end up where they're going.
And that can be a difficult challenge, too, to mm-hmm. critically analyze what you're being taught. And I guess a good sign that I've always ascribed to is that the church is growing. That's a sign that sheep are being fed.
Yeah.
And then look for that first. Again, Robbie, the executive director of Preserving Bible Times, their website, preservingbibletimes.org. You'll find that site is just loaded with context. Some of it you can buy. A lot of it's free. And go there and sign up for the Between the Lines newsletter, which comes out at least monthly, sometimes two or three times. You get it via email. Doesn't cost a thing. Robbie puts that out, and there's a tremendous look at context in all that material. It teaches you to read between the lines.
Good to be with you, Jim and Sharon, on the Broken Road. Thanks for having me on. This Sunday is Good Shepherd Sunday.
It is.
So good time to be in church.
You have a terrific week. We'll see you in about 7 days or so, okay?
Looking forward to it. A pleasure as always.